Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. Well, I interviewed Wayne Dyer so many years ago when I was doing a show in Baltimore called People Are Talking. And then in 1996 on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and then in 1999 on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Over the years, he's become known as the father of motivation. So inviting him to be a part of our Soul Series, the father of motivation, well, that's a no-brainer. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series. Hi, everybody. I'm Oprah, and I'm really hoping that you're getting as much from this series as I am. And I'm so happy to have here today someone who has studied in the ancient Chinese religion of Taoism. And before I introduce him, for better historic understanding and context, a little Taoism 101. Approximately 200 million people adhere to traditional Chinese religions, of which Taoism is considered predominant. It takes its name from the word Tao, translated literally as the way. It looks like Tao, but it's really Tao. Mm-hmm. And it's based on the Tao Te Ching, which was written over 2,500 years ago. And legend has it that, is it Lao Tzu?
Lao Tzu.
Lao Tzu is the founder and the author of the Tao Te Ching. And it's comprised of 81 passages, 81. And according to my guest, it describes a way of living that's balanced, moral, and spiritual, and that works for all facets of life on Earth. So we're going to be talking about the Tao Te Ching today. But first, I don't even know how to begin to introduce you, because we were going through all the books that you have. Mm. I just say umpteen.
31.
Okay. Umpteen bestsellers.
Right.
Including The Power of Intention, which actually mm-hmm. is my all-time favorite. Do you know who it is, listeners? It's Dr. Wayne Dyer. And he is here to talk about the Tao, which is his latest book, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, Living the Wisdom of the Tao. So why the Tao? Why now? Why now the Tao?
Well, the Tao is one of those things that kept coming at me. It's I call it a calling, when you just keep getting sort of like synchronistic callings from, somebody would tell me about it, and then I had talked to someone who had been through a very difficult time with addictions and mm-hmm. so on, and wasn't able to do anything in the program, but was just read the Tao every single day. And the only thing that seemed to work for this particular person and others, including one of my own children who has struggled with addictions herself, was in reading the Tao.
That's interesting, because, you know, that whole controversy I had with James Frey,
right.
I don't know if you know about it.
I do.
But he says that was one of the things that also helped him, that struggling with addiction. That was the person.
James called my daughter, as a matter of fact.
And
was willing to do anything at all to help her. I mean, he's, someone that I have a great deal of love and respect for. And what he said to me was that I wouldn't do the program, I wouldn't do the 10 steps, I didn't want to substitute one kind of an addiction for another,
right?
But I would read the Tao.
Uh-huh.
And then my publisher out in California called me and said, you've got to read this book, and you've got to do this. And every time I would turn on the television or something, I would be some kind of reference to the Tao. And I've gotten to the point in my life and in my career where I listened when these sort of things that start coming at you from a distance and
that
you're not quite
sure. That appear to be coincidences.
They appear to be, but there's
no such thing.
Yeah, there's no coincidence. In fact, the word coincidence itself is a mathematical term. You remember in geometry they would say two angles that coincide are said to be two angles that fit together perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've taken a term that means two things that fit together perfectly and interpreted it to mean something that fits together accidentally, which we've just reversed the whole concept of coincidence. It's
wow.
Coincide. So I called my publisher and I said,
I just had an aha moment. I never heard it explained that way before.
Really?
Thank you. Yeah. That was great.
So it's
So the Tao kept calling you.
It just kept calling me and calling at me, and I would read a little bit of it. And I taught at a university. I even taught a little bit about world religions, and mm-hmm. I taught about Taoism and so on. But I really wasn't really that familiar with it. And then I began to do the research on it, and most of the people who write about the Tao say it's the wisest book ever written. It's the most translated book in the history of publishing, other than the Bible.
Other than the Bible, yes.
Yeah, and there are 14,000 different interpretations or translations that I came across myself. And so I would read the very first verse, the opening line of the Tao. Says the Tao that can be named is not the Tao. You can call things something. The minute that you call something or put a label on it, then it's no longer the Tao.
Yes. You know, I was wondering, I was saying this to the producer of our show, that I obviously wanted to talk to you about it, but I was thinking, do you need to be further evolved along the spiritual path before you can begin to accept or receive the concepts of the Tao?
Not at all.
You don't?
Not at all. Some of
the
most common things that you say every day in your life came right out of the Tao Te Ching.
Yeah, but I know the whole idea of no rules.
Right. The journey of 1,000 miles
begins with one step.
Mm-hmm. Those who know don't speak. Those who speak don't know. Think small rather than thinking big. All of these kinds of comments and things have come out of this little Chinese man. I mean, Lao Tzu translates to old man. This old man that just had these visions about how to go about living our lives conflict-free, mm-hmm. how to live without having any enemies, how to be at peace. You know what it really taught me, Oprah? Because I did it for a whole year. It taught me to think like God thinks. And that was that's my favorite quote from Einstein. You know, his whole idea, he said, I don't want to be consumed with the details. I'm just paraphrasing. He said, I just want to learn to think like God thinks. And so how does God think? And I began to see that God thinks without force, you know, makes everything happen without any force at all. There are no one is excluded. Everyone is included. God does nothing but give. Mm-hmm. It's always about giving. You know, Hafiz, the great poet from the 13th century, said that he was talking about, just about giving. He said, even after all this time, the sun never says to the earth, you owe me. He said, just think what a love like that does. It lights up the whole sky.
Wow.
It lights up the whole sky. And it's just, so it's like if you can, you know, there's been so much talk about The Secret, you know.
Right,
I know
yes.
you've done shows on it, and, you know, I was asked
I wanted to talk to you
that.
About that. First of all, I wanted to ask you, do you feel somewhat validated?
I just feel so grateful and so thrilled that it's one of the most popular nonfiction books in the history of publishing. Over uh-huh. 10 million copies are out there. I mean, it's giving people a look at the power of what happens when you change the way you look at things. The things you look at change. I mean, the world begins to change when you change the way you look at it. I would have liked to have seen a little different emphasis myself. I think too much of it is on getting rather
yes.
than giving. And,
mm-hmm.
And if you have this incredible power to align yourself with a universal divine mind that is always giving and always offering, then it seems to me that's where we ought to be putting our attention.
Actually, I was surprised when I first saw, you know, the first tape of The Secret. I was actually surprised that you weren't on there.
I was asked to be.
Okay, that makes sense, because I thought, well, you are the father of all this.
Yeah.
So, why did you choose not to be?
I didn't want to be a part of that emphasis any longer. And uh-huh. that was really my...
reason sort of, for doing Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life.
And it was really the result of my living the way I'm living now. The way I'm living now is on an island. It's in a place where... I can just get as much validation from a tree or a spider or, you know, anything in nature. I mean, what Lao Tzu taught me is that God is in nature. And you have to find your own nature, and that in every single one of us, in every human being out there listening, we have a nature, and we know what that nature is, and we know what our calling is. We just haven't changed our thoughts to be in alignment with it. And this... what I want to do with this, and this is, to
with
me...
this being Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life.
Yeah, this is about teaching people how, what they should be thinking. Become more flexible.
Right.
Become less rule-oriented. Become more open. Don't have any enemies. Lao Tzu was teaching all of us 2,500 years ago. This is the way to think and to have a moral word.
Yeah. Don't talk about peace, be peace.
Right.
Don't look to be virtuous, be virtuous.
Be humble.
Yes.
Be peaceful. Be loving. Be all of these kinds of things. Be serene. Be content. You know, stop trying so hard. Just get back, relax, enjoy. The next thing I'm going to do is on the dynamics of how to change a thought. Because most people know that what they should be thinking.
Yes.
They just don't really know how to go about changing the way that they think. You know, it's like, because most of us, we have, what, 60,000, they say, separate thoughts every day.
Yeah.
60,000. But the problem is we have the same 60,000 we had yesterday, and we're going to have the same 60,000 again tomorrow. And we just keep repeating the same thoughts. And none of us ever ask the important questions like, is what I'm thinking true? Because the thought that it's going to be difficult to do something, for example, or it's going to be complicated, or it's going to take a long time, or it's a struggle, usually, if you really examine that, there's no truth in that whatsoever.
So I'm talking to Dr. Wayne Dyer, who's really the father of the spiritual movement as we know it in our time. A lot of people call you the father of motivation, but when I was talking to you, you weren't just a motivational speaker. Mm. You were trying back in 1978 when I first
interviewed. Was it 78? I thought it was 76. I used to fly up to Baltimore every time there was a...
Yes, and talk to you when I was doing that little show called People Are Talking with Richard Scheer. And we'd start talking about these ideas, which really started to open me up in a way that I'd never experienced before. What was the moment, the spiritual moment, and I use, you know, the word spiritual carefully here. What was that moment that got you to see your own life differently, that opened you up?
I know exactly the moment. I know the date, the time.
Okay, everything. Tell me.
It was 1974, and I grew up in a series of foster homes and orphanages and so on, as you know. My father walked out on us.
Yes.
And he just abandoned us. He never paid any support. He just had three boys. My mother had three boys under the age of four before she was 23 years old. And she was just left. It was a depression. I was born in 1940. My brothers were born in 38 and 36. And I carried around deep anger and deep resentment and deep hatred. I dreamt every night. Rage was a good word, because at night I would wake up and I would be sweating, and I would meet him in a bar someplace, and I would be hitting, because he was an alcoholic and so on. And but I never was able to find him. I ended up in Biloxi, Mississippi, at his grave, through a series of just the most bizarre circumstances. I rented a car.
That weren't coincidences.
Yes, exactly. And I was sent. I was sent to get rid of this rage inside of me, because I knew that I came here to do something great. I knew that. I knew that when I was a little boy. I knew I could talk kids out of being upset at what was going on in the orphanage, for example. They always, when everybody would show up, they'd always say, "Where's Wayne? Go get them." And whoever it was, a little girl would be crying, and I'd say, "This is the greatest place in the world. There's no parents. You're going to love this place." And that's what I would just try to take the attention off of what they were, their anger and their fear and so on. So I always knew this. So I get to my father's grave. I didn't even know he was dead up until just a few months before, and his body had been shipped there. And when I went to the grave and I stood there at his grave, I finally said, "From this moment on," this was after 3 hours of just stomping on the ground, I said, "From this moment on, I send you love. From this moment on, I will no longer have any resentment or hatred or bitterness towards you at all." I never dreamt about this man again. I feel his presence very, very frequently. From that moment on, I quit drinking. Alcohol was no longer a part of my life. I lost the weight that I was, I changed my diet around. The right people began to show up in my life. And it was all about forgiveness, Oprah. It was just about, Mark Twain said that forgiveness is the fragrance the violet sheds on the heel that has crushed it. And I understood it finally. I finally got that.
Say that again.
Forgiveness is the fragrance that the violet sheds on the heel that has crushed it.
Oh, that makes me want to cry.
It's so poetic. Yeah, it's so beautiful. And I have never had an angry thought towards him or towards anyone else since that time.
In Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, Living the Wisdom of the Tao, Dr. Wayne Dyer's latest book, I think it was 31 or 32 books, bestsellers. You say, "For my father, Melvin Lyle Dyer, even though I've never known you, after thoroughly digesting the Tao, I finally get it! ! It is and always was all perfect. I love you." Mm.
And I feel that. I feel him now. I feel him right here with us now.
How was it always perfect when he essentially abandoned you? How was that perfect for people who are listening? We're talking to Dr. Wayne Dyer about his latest book, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. And he lived for a solid year this...
Lived the
Tao every day. How was it perfect?
It's perfect because it taught me the most important thing that we have to learn in this planet. It's about forgiveness. If you don't have something to forgive, in the Course in Miracles, it says if you haven't blamed, then there's no need to forgive.
Yeah.
So once you get rid of blame, once you get rid of your hostility toward, so in order for me to be able to get to a place where I could teach people about how to go through their life without bitterness and anger and tension and fear and hatred and all that stuff that we carry around because of the way other people treat us, I had to go through that experience myself. Everything that we went through in our life, we had to go through in order to get to this moment.
And that's why it was perfect.
It was absolutely perfect.
It was perfect for you.
Right.
I feel that way too. Being born where I was born, raised the way I was raised, everything, including the you know, sexual abuse, the poverty, all of it.
Right.
Has made this moment possible.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And therefore, it was perfect.
It was. I mean, I remember hearing you talk a couple of years ago, and you talked about your parents had sex one time?
One time.
One time in their whole life. One time. Before, after. And you were the result of that.
She was wearing a poodle skirt, and he wanted to see what was under it, he said.
Is that right?
Yes. She was wearing a poodle skirt.
I remember those poodle skirts.
She was wearing a poodle skirt. It was a pink poodle skirt, and he said...
And it was under a tree or something?
And he... asked to take her home after school, and they stopped by an oak tree. I think it's why I love oaks so much. I just am obsessed with oak trees. Don't even know what it is, why I'm so drawn to them. But anyway, under a tree, and he said when he took her to my grandmother's house, her mother's home, that she still had the leaves on the back of the skirt because they forgot to brush all the leaves.
And she was She was young, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was 18 years old.
18 years old. Mm-hmm. And that one, in that one. Now, how could there be a? How could that be a? An accident.
An accident, you know, or a coincidence.
Is something that fits together perfectly.
Yes, I often think about, look at all the series of things could happen. It wasn't even like they were friends.
Mm.
They happened to be passing at the same moment.
Mm.
And he said, hey, girl, what if she hadn't come out of that door at that moment? Mm. You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
If 1 second later, you know. That's why there's an organizing intelligence behind... that's one of the things. That
I know that's what you talk about in this book. The organized intelligence.
Yes, and organizing it. Just think, I used to give the example of just imagine for a second a junkyard. I mean, it's got 3 million pieces of junk, just strewn every place. Everything you can think of, old toilet seats. It's got the wiring and just the old generators and
batteries.
Everything that you can think of. The whole 3 million of them. A wind comes along, a 200-mile-an-hour wind comes along. And takes all of this junk and twirls it around, and it goes up into the air, and it's twirling around in the air of this, you know, the cyclone that goes by. The cyclone passes, and all the junk comes back down to the ground, and there's a Boeing 747, where was just a field of junk before. What is the likelihood of something like that happening? What, I mean, 1 billion to 1, 1 trillion to 1, could it ever happen? It takes an organizing intelligence to take all of these things and bring it together. And a Boeing 747 is nothing compared to a human being or compared to the universe, compared to all of those stuff. To think that this all is something that just happened because it was some happenstance accident, there is something called the Tao. And it says the Tao does nothing, but it leaves nothing undone.
Those who are listening and hearing about this for the first time, and there are a lot of people actually hearing this philosophy for the first time, is Tao more of a, is it a religion, would you say? Is it a lifestyle?
Lao Tzu.
Rules for living?
Lao Tzu hated rules. And if you were to call Taoism a religion to Lao Tzu, he would have laughed at you. He would have nothing to do with
it. Because it's not a religion.
It had nothing to do with religion. He had anything that had to do with rules of conduct and how to run your life. What he said about rules and laws and so on is that if you need rules and you need laws in order to be a moral person, then you're not connected to the Tao.
I know, but when I read that, I thought, well, oh my God, we're going to have anarchy. We'd be craziness. It'd be heresy. It would be if we don't have rules.
The anchor of the universe is located in every single one of us. Your children know what to do. One of my favorite things to say to my children always was when they would ask, should I do this? What should I do? What time should I come in? My favorite response always was, you know what to do. You know within you the right thing to do. You know whether or not you should come in this late or that late. You know whether you should eat that or not eat that. You don't need me to tell you that. It's about non-interference. It's about seeing the anchor of the universe is located in every one of us. I'm not talking about, there would be anarchy if some of us read it and then others don't read it and then they begin to, impose it on other people. But if everyone understood that there's no concept of enemy, that we all come from the same place. In the 40th verse of the Tao, it says that the way of Tao is a return trip. We are all coming back. You know, T.S. Eliot's favorite famous line about, you know, we shall not cease from exploration, but at the end of all of our exploring will be to return to the place from which we originated and to know it for the first time. To know it for the first time. To know that you came from a place that has no beginnings and no ends, that is infinite, that has no boundaries, that just is. And that's, you know, it's like you're doing nothing. You're doing nothing. You're being done. Let yourself be done in the way that God designed you to be, or the Tao designed you to be.
Okay. So, all right. So how do you describe what it is? Because people need...
You don't get to. You don't get to it. You don't get to, because that's the opening line of the Tao, the very first verse of the Tao. The Tao that can be named is not the Tao. You, as soon as you put a label on it, and Kierkegaard, the famous Danish theologian, said, once you label me, you negate me. I no longer am me. Once you label, once you put a label on me, I am a woman. You know, I am black. I am white. I am tall. I am Catholic. I am Muslim. Once you label me, you negate me, and now I must live up to whatever label you have placed on me.
Yeah, what the expectation for that label is.
And the problem with labeling is that it creates conflict. It creates something that is and something that isn't. See, our minds are not capable of understanding oneness. And that Tao, that's why in the Tao it says, those who know do not speak. Those who speak do not know. What Lao Tzu was saying there is those who know are connected to oneness. And when you're connected to oneness, you don't need to say anything. You just are.
So you spent a year. We need another half hour because we didn't even get into what that year was like. So next week I want to begin with the moment you decided that you were going to spend the year.
Oh, it was a great year.
To your secretary, I want you to get rid of everything. Mm. I was thinking.
That was the day after I turned 65.
Everything? Mm. Wow.
Mm. All my clothes.
All your clothes?
Yeah, I did my PBS special in bare feet. I said, I don't even have any shoes.
I know. I saw you in the PBS special with no shoes on.
Right. That's right.
Didn't have any shoes?
No, that's not.
Oh, all right. So.
But I live in Hawaii where, you know, it's like.
You don't need shoes.
You don't wear shoes. When you walk into someone's home, I know you come spend a lot of time in Hawaii. When you go into someone's home in Hawaii.
You take your shoes off.
Always.
Always. That's true.
And Muktananda had this wonderful line. He said, if you wear shoes everywhere you go, the whole earth feels like leather.
Wow.
You know, and earth isn't like leather at all.
Well, that's why I was happy to at least see you in shoes in Chicago today.
Sandals. Normally I wouldn't.
No, but it's Chicago. I've been happy to talk to you. So again, next week, join us again when Dr. Wayne Dyer tells us not only about changing your thoughts and changing your life, but what it was like to live an entire year living the Tao.
Come on back.
You're listening to my Soul series on Oprah and Friends, XM 156. Thank you for joining us.
I could talk
to you all day.
Well, I know.
We could just program the whole day. I could talk all day. We'll do it again next week. Bye, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.